Yeah, for some reason, I
Huh.
don't know why, but everything you like, I've done this like, I feel like 4 times. I don't know if I'm just like stupid right now or what's happening, but like everything you say, I'm like, do you mean this? And I'm like, no, why would he be talking about rap music? Like, I'm having.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Portland, Oregon, you are Richard Wally.
And from LA, you are Kester Robinson. Do I have to say California? Do people just know it's LA?
And they should, might right? think that you're talking the abbreviation of Louisiana.
Oh, yes. Just in case he is in California.
That's why I say Portland, Oregon, and not just Portland, in case
they
somebody from
Maine.
The East Coast, yeah, thinks I'm talking about Portland, Maine. I don't know why anyone would think that, but yesterday, I guess I'll announce this sort of at the top of the show. We finally recorded our episode with Patrick and his father at Make Dad Read Comics.
Mm-hmm. We did.
And I think it went off without a hitch, and we had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I had too much fun.
You certainly had a lot of fun.
I did. I got to talk about something different than movies.
Yeah. I think I told you later when we were talking after the show. That you were like a dam that bursted.
Well, you often use this thing about hats where you wear many hats when it comes to nerd stuff, like things you nerd out about.
I'd say I'm a well-rounded geek, not so much like a super geek into any one particular thing, but I feel like I, you know,
you have a huge melon hat for your movie stuff, please son.
Well, I have a degree, so
yeah, that's what I'm saying. You've gone that far, Cassidy.
Sure,
it's a pretty big hat. No, this I just don't, you know, I've always loved movies and I think that they're a decent sized hat, but I wouldn't say they're my biggest hat. I don't know what my biggest hat would be.
I think it would probably be comic books, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
I judging from yesterday, I'm gonna say yes. I'm gonna make that judgment call for you.
Oh yeah, well yeah, there are weird random topics I know about it. And I don't know where, I just know them. But
we got to read Parker the Hunter.
It does nothing to do with Jason Statham. Just
no.
I mean, it does a little, but not.
I mean,
no.
I mean, I don't even think we have to say that because I don't think anyone remembers that movie, least of all me, and I saw that movie.
Well, I'm just saying, I think that, you know, some person would be like, oh, that one with Jason Statham. No, it's not. No,
not quite.
Just stop.
And it was a good episode, but you know, it almost didn't happen. I didn't talk about it on the show when we recorded with them, but I nearly averted a crisis.
What?
Before being able to do the show.
Like you stopped a plane from crashing or?
Yeah. I almost didn't make it because I was stopping a plane in mid-flight, like Superman.
Well, you said crisis, so I mean,
not a crisis on Infinite Earths.
Okay.
Like a minor life-size crisis. The usual for me.
You spilt coffee on your pants?
No.
Oh.
No, it's a little bit more than that. This has happened more than once, where I'll be so ready to leave work. And we were talking before the show, I was saying, you know, Hollywood's pretty much shut down for the last 4 days. Because of the holiday that's coming up, so no news is being posted, and my job is to sift through movie news all day and rewrite it. And there was just nothing, there hasn't been anything, so I was so insanely bored that as soon as 6 o'clock rolled around, I just bolted out of there with a me-shaped hole in the wall. And I forgot the power cord to my laptop.
Oh.
And I didn't realize that I forgot it until about 7:30-ish. And usually that's fine. Like I said, this has happened before. And usually there's somebody there, a night crew or whatever, that works until about 9, just finishing things up. But because it was Friday before the holiday weekend. When I got there, it was completely shut down. And I have a like a sensor, like a key fob that gets me into the building.
Yeah.
But they had used the deadbolt as well. So there was no way for me to get in there. So frantically, and I only had like 10% life on my laptop. So frantically, I'm texting as many people as I have their information for. So the guy I work with primarily, I text him first and he's like, I don't know, there might be someone there Saturday. If not, you're kind of screwed. Finally, I get in contact with one of the head editors on like Saturday morning. And he's like, oh, I'll go and unlock it for you. Or I'll unlock the deadbolt if you have the key fob and you can get into the office and pick it up. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm relieved a little bit. The tag to this story is I get down there, and as I'm like walking up to the door to like let myself in, there was a cleaning guy there that nobody knew apparently goes there on Saturday mornings.
Well, no, you never know that guy exists.
I didn't know.
Unless you're that... Well, no, that's what I'm saying. How do you ever know that guy?
Right. He lets me in. He lets me in before I even have to use the sensor. So this whole, like, you know, 7 different people I emailed, like 4 different people I called, texting frantically. Everybody's leaving for the weekend to do their family thing or whatever. None of it actually mattered because there would have been somebody there to let me in. But I grabbed the power cord and I was able to do yesterday's podcast.
Well, there you go.
There you go. So that was my adventure.
I've just had good times. I don't have adventures anymore. I refuse to have bad days.
Something tonight?
Oh, no. Well, yeah, we went to a birthday party for a 1-year-old. That was fun. That was just mostly like hanging out, talking, that kind of thing.
Right.
But on Friday? Yeah, Friday. We did a board game night at some friend's house, and we played the Battlestar Galactica game. Now, the problem with that game is if you've ever played it, they never opened it, and it's got like 30 pages of rules, and it's really, really complicated. So it took us a good like 7 hours to get that game going, started, and finished. But it was good. No, it was good. It was good.
I hate games like that. I'm so trepidatious when I go to a friend's house and they want to play a board game. And they're, like, really into board gaming. Like, it's different if it's, like, just a group of people and, the board game is the 4th or 5th thing suggested. Then you know it's going to be something that's kind of a party game and everyone can kind of jump in. But when it's people who are super into board games and you're choosing between 5 or different games to play, then you know it's going to be some arduous, crazy, convoluted Calvin Ball type thing with this insane learning curve where you're not even sure how to play the game till the end of the game.
You hyperbolize much. No, I like strategic games and those. Well, not just strategic ones. I like all kinds of board games. I think they're just fun and easy and they pass the time and it's not, I don't know. You get to socialize at the same time. I think that they're a lot of fun, but this one was super complicated.
Right. And so it wouldn't be for me.
Well, if you know anything about Battlestar Galactica, like
I don't,
I know
Cylons. That's what I know.
I'm speaking to the imaginary. Yes, Cylons. Well, there you go.
Cylons and Katie Sackhoff.
That's well, there you go. basically, you play as a character, and but there's like double crosses. Mm-hmm. But they're like hidden, so you don't know who's like double crossing you. But it's basically supposed to be a cooperative game where
you're battle starring.
Well, yeah. Well, you're all trying to complete the same goal,
right?
And but then there's secret people who aren't, and it got pretty heated at the end. But
okay,
but me and the other person who didn't become Cylons, we won, and that's what's important.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. You know,
is it one of those games, because these are my least favorite kind of board games, where you have 6 or 7 different cards and they all let you do different things and you have to remember what each card does and know when to use them?
Oh, it has all sorts of components like that.
Here's my thing, is I can't be bothered to want to remember all those things.
Well, you go with your best strategy, Cassidy. You can't remember
But you have to know what the cards do to have a strategy. I read them once, and 45 minutes later, I'll die. And then they'll be like, okay, well, what were your cards? And they're like, oh, dude, you could have used this like 15 plays ago when I did this. You could have used this to cancel out that. And it's like, I forgot I had that card. I don't care.
See, that's what it really comes down to. See, that's I play for much fun.
What it comes down to, yeah.
And it comes down to other people are making me do this for you.
Care. Yeah. It depends on the game. See, I'm not a very sophisticated gamer. I am to board games what like the average like Michael Bay fan or whatever is to movies. Like I just like to have I like it to be just something to sort of do while you're mostly just hanging out. No. Like I like a game to be in the background.
To be in the background.
Yeah, like you're kind of engaged in it, but for the most part, nothing is too high of stakes. Let's go ahead and get into the movie news. There's not, like I said, there hasn't been a lot, but we found a couple things, and I'll let you start.
So this is actually, like, news. Cate Blanchett is going to be playing Lucille Ball and a biopic written by Aaron Sorkin. So that's a decent pedigree so far.
Yeah, that's a lot of things happening.
Yeah. As an actress, she's very capable and great. And so I think, I can see her doing the part. I don't know. I haven't seen, I would say, some of her more comedic roles, so I'm not sure. And I don't know how, like, dramatic it's going to be or if they're going to,
She hasn't done a lot of comedic roles.
That's what I thought.
I mean, she's done movies that are funny-ish. Like, I think Blue Jasmine is, for a Woody Allen movie, has that kind of wry sense of humor about it, but it's also a pretty serious movie as well, and her character really takes a dark turn.
Right. Well, that's what I was talking about. I guess dramedy would be a better way to say that. But it probably won't be because comedy. It might be a dramedy, but I mean, it's written by Aaron Sorkin, so
he can kind of do both. But there's a couple things that I was a little concerned with this news.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's as far as just like throwing people together to do a thing. It's Yeah, they're getting very capable people to do all those things.
Sure.
But do we want these people to do these things? Because, as we've kind of hinted at already, Lucille Ball, famous comedian, I don't really feel Cate Blanchett for that. Like, Lucille Ball had a lot more kind of, like, spunk and unpredictability and sort of kind of a dorky sense of humor. Although, it's a biopic, so I'm sure they'll go into the more serious side of her life, not just her TV personality.
Mm.
And she also did, movies as well before she was on I Love Lucy. She was in, like, actual films where she was not playing Lucy.
But in general, she has a kooky kind of charm to her.
Yeah, and whereas Cate Blanchett is a little icy, I feel.
Well, reserved and... She's Gladriel, and she's going to, come and give you llama's bread and send you on your way.
Suck your soul out of your eyeballs.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. No, she's kind of known as something like an impressionist now, and like being able to embody somebody completely, like she did with Bob Dylan in I'm Not There, and she did with Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator. Mm-hmm. I think she was nominated for both of those performances, actually. Maybe she has this trick in her bag and she'll blow us all away. So that's my first thing. The second thing is Aaron Sorkin the biopic guy now?
Well, that's
does he want to be?
Well, what I was thinking is, I don't know completely, but I mean, the way that he does biopics is more interesting. Like even the one that's coming up, I know you're very trepidatious and not into it. But Danny Boyle directed Steve Jobs movie.
I'm becoming more interested the more trailers I see.
Besides the more trailers, the format is it mm-hmm. happens at the three launches of big launches of Apple,
right?
The Apple Tech, and so doing that in that specific format makes a lot more interesting and much more specific,
mm-hmm.
and gives it a little bit of a interesting structure as opposed to just start to finish. This is his life,
right? Yeah, he's a little bit more interested in like playing around with form and yeah, letting the story kind of have a certain kind of richness that I think a lot of like biopic writers generally don't.
Well, see, so if he starts making new movies that have a different biopic shape, maybe biopics will get a little better. So I don't know. I do have some faith in Aaron Sorkin, and to have them both together, it's kind of like, okay, there must be at least something going on, like an interesting idea. Because if it's already that far that Aaron Sorkin and Cate Blanchett are talking about it, I don't think it would just be like, I mean, or Cate Blanchett talked to Aaron Sorkin and says, I need to pay for my boathouse. Those are the two options.
Right, that's the other one.
But I don't think so. She doesn't seem like the boathouse kind of actor or
I bet she has
actress,
a
I should
boat.
say.
I bet somewhere she has a boat. My first story is another biopic, actually. Josh Gad, known probably mostly well known for having been in the original cast for The Book of Mormon, but he was also recently in The Wedding Ringer, and he's gonna be in the Beauty and the Beast movie that's coming up. He has been cast as film critic Roger Ebert in a movie called Russ and Roger, where Will Ferrell will play opposite him as exploitationer Russ Myers. And it's, I guess the movie's going to sort of chronicle a sliver of both of their lives, where they worked together to when Roger Ebert wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls and Russ Meyer directed it.
Well, is this going
This
to
was
be a
like
weird
the
concept comedy, or is this a like straight up like drama biopic?
I mean, have you ever seen Beyond the Valley of the Dolls?
I'm not sure.
If you haven't, you should.
Okay.
It's crazy. I mean, it is wackadoo, and it's a sequel, a like semi-sequel, sort of, kind of more of a conceptual sequel to the original Valley of the Dolls, which came out in like the mid-60s. That movie is like something has become something of like a camp classic.
Sure.
But it was made with like big movie stars, and it was meant to like be taken seriously as this like expose into like the drugs of Hollywood and how starlets like lives are go down the drain and blah blah blah. And it ended up being super funny because the tone was all over the place and whatever.
Yeah, sure.
But it was like a movie made by a big studio. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is an exploitation film made by the guy who made Faster Pussycat Kill Kill that already has the camp like locked and loaded and is just out to like shock and annoy for 90 minutes. And it's, instead of the movie industry, it's the music industry, but it's mostly, and it's also during that period, like towards the late 60s or early 70s where there was like the LSD movies. So
Sure.
there's a lot of just kind of weird freak out like people in parties and then all of a sudden, the scenery starts swirling around and and then at the end people's heads are getting cut off. Like it's crazy. And yeah, Roger Ebert wrote that movie. And I assume that the story they're gonna tell is like a, an odd couple story, right? Because the idea of like Russ Meyer and Roger Ebert was this kind of stately newspaper guy, and an intellectual, and Russ Meyers was this cigar chewing Hollywood sleazy guy. So I'm assuming that's probably gonna be the angle they go with, especially given who they got to play both parts. I'm kind of into this idea. I wouldn't nor like if they if I just heard Roger Ebert the movie, I saw that documentary, which I sort of have mixed feelings about anyway, but I don't know how interested I would be to just to see a documentary about his life,
Sure.
especially or a biopic about his life, given that we already have the documentary and a book. But if they want to just tell this story, this is one of the more interesting places of his life to tell.
Well, again, zooming in on a specific like time and trying to like be kind of focus and kind of like pull out the themes, that's interesting. Like, again, a whole life shot, that's where it gets boring. So yeah, no, I would be down, especially with kind of a strange casting in a way. I could see both of them being able to do it. Gad, I don't know as well, but with Will Ferrell, I know he can do a more serious role. He just,
Yeah.
you know, prefers to act like he's on a Spanish soap, you know, because he
Right.
can. But,
But he, and I mean, I think playing Russ Meyer, he could kind of do both. I think he could have a little bit of a darker edge if the story needs to go there, but I think he can also let it be sort of play a caricature of sort of the, you know, exploitation director sleazeball thing.
Right. Well, that's just, I guess that's my big question is how Arch is it going? I
Yeah, we
mean,
don't
I
know.
don't know quality wise either way. I don't know if I really care. I just am like,
Michael
eh.
Winterbottom, who directed 24 Hour Party People, and The Killer Inside Me, actually, is going to be the one directing.
Well, yeah, I don't know what that means, but okay.
I'm kind of into this idea. I'm interested to see how the story develops.
Agreed. I'm interested to see where it goes.
I'll let you do the last one.
Okay, so Tommy Wiseau.
Who?
Tommy Wiseau? Wiseau? I don't know. That guy from The Room.
Right.
He is pitching some ideas to Hollywood for him to direct. He says he wants to direct the next Fantastic Four sequel. This is, okay, I'm gonna read his quote.
Okay.
You know, I told you I saw Fantastic Four. I don't know what I'm doing.
You
It just
didn't do
for
his voice?
I was trying, but I don't remember it. You're kidding me. You know, I told you I saw the Fantastic Four. Dot dot dot. It just dot dot dot. I'm not being critical. Let me put it this way. I like it. I did enjoy it, number one. Number two, it's too bad they didn't call me. That's all I want to say. And I rest my case. Laughs. That's all I can tell you. Laughs. Good response in Europe, though. That's my understanding. But it's too bad they didn't call me. That's my point. Maybe if there's a sequel, maybe I'm not, these are his, you knows, by the way.
Right.
Maybe your article gets me that job. Who knows? What will happen?
They might as well. I mean, how many times have they tried to do a Fantastic Four movie? And it's like a curse at this point. It's like impossible to do a competent Fantastic Four movie. And it's so weird that they've been able to get like it's something as complicated as the X-Men or the Guardians of the Galaxy, right? But Fantastic Four, which is relatively straightforward in, you know, I mean, there's some
In
sci-fi
comic book
stuff.
land.
In comic book land, relatively straightforward. You have a family who goes to space, come back with superpowers, Doctor Doom, whatever. But yeah, you have the Roger Corman movie in the 90s that never even got released. Now you
There's
have, you
maybe
can,
some reasons for that, but.
yeah, I mean, you can buy it from like Comic Cons and stuff like that. And I think it's free to watch on YouTube
Yeah.
now. And then the two Tim Story ones, which were extremely underwhelming.
That's a good way to say it.
Then they were kind of comedies and they were like tonally weird. And then this last one, which I still haven't seen, and I want to eventually just to, so I can, you know, have an opinion about it. But, you know, I've heard practically nothing good about, including from the director himself who made it.
Well, I've heard actually some, well, that's true. I've actually heard from some people there's like a good like 2/3 that's okay, and then it just gets really horrible.
And then it
But
gets, yeah, super
yeah.
bad. Yeah. But so they might as well like just embrace that this is like, you know, just try and outcrap the next one and get, and who could do it better than Tommy Wiseau?
Well, they might get a good response out of it too. It might just be so bad that it's entertaining.
Right.
And the other thing, well, that would be crazy. And the other thing is they just want to keep it for Marvel. Like, I mean, that's why they pushed the last Fantastic Four
Yeah.
into production so quickly and everything. So, I mean, yeah, why not? Just let him do it. I agree with you.
He should play Doctor Doom.
And see, well, you know, there's going to be a weird sex scene and he's just going to have just his helmet and you're going to have to like stare at his weird ass for like 20 minutes.
Hello, doggy. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and get into the reviews. We're going to be talking about American Ultra, which we're catching up with. This has been out a couple weeks, but because it's a holiday week, there's practically nothing worth seeing that's come out this week. And since this was a movie I kind of wanted to see, Despite the fact that nobody else went and saw it, I wanted to catch up with it. And I guess to some degree, I'm glad I did. This is directed by Nima Nor. Oh, wow. This is like a tough one, and I haven't practiced.
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
Nima Norizade? Zade?
I have no idea. It's an Indian name. Right. I don't know how they do their vowels. There's a lot of vowels there, though.
And it's written by Max Landis. And I believe this is the second thing he's ever written that's come out theatrically since Chronicle, which was directed by the same guy who did Fantastic Four most recently. And I like Chronicle a lot. And Max Landis is a cult of personality. Him out there in the world is an interesting fellow. He's son of John Landis, and he is very candid about his writing process. And, you know, if you follow him on Twitter, he is extremely active. And is constantly talking and engaging with his fans or whatever.
He's millennial plus.
Yes, he is very much a millennial celebrity presence. So I was interested to see what his next movie was going to be. And the basic story here, as it's being sold anyways, is that Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart play this couple named Mike and Phoebe. They're kind of stoners and layabouts. They don't have a ton of ambition, but they love each other a lot. Jesse Eisenberg has some anxiety issues where he, for some reason, he can't board airplanes. He can't seem to make any like long-term commitments, and he's really in love with the Phoebe character, and wants to propose to her, but is waiting for the right time to do it. And, you know, because of his anxiety, he can never seem to find the right time. In the middle of all of this, we learn that he is actually a government creation of some sort, or some sort of secret agent type, that was invented in a government experiment. And
he's like a nerdy Jason Bourne.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the basic idea, right? This is basically like Jason Bourne meets like Cheech and Chong or whatever, or like that
Bill, that's and what Ted, something like that.
Bill and Ted. Yeah. That's what they're selling it as, but that's not exactly what the movie really is.
No.
And I think there's a pretty distinct difference between the trailers and what the movie actually ended up being that is interesting and not very helpful to the movie in a lot of ways. There's a lot of ultra violence in here, and there's people hunting him down, and he learns how powerful he actually is in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this movie?
I think I have a very specific take on this. Mm-hmm. I think that this was a frustrating film.
Okay.
I actually think that a lot about it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I think it has a really good cast.
Yeah.
However, the two, and I actually think the script is really good and really interesting and could be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think tonally it's kind of off, and it doesn't know sometimes where it wants to go or how to switch from tone to tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's terribly miscast. I don't think either of the leads in this bring what they need to bring to the roles. And partially, I think that they could if they were pushed in the right direction by a more competent director. But I don't think that this is the right guy. I think he's fairly early in his career. And looking at his films, I haven't seen his films, so I can't say. But I know you hated one of his films.
Which one?
I'd have to look at it.
Oh, Project X.
Yes.
Yes. I didn't even know that going into this.
I
despise that movie.
I looked it up because this was a very frustrating film, because I thought that the script was actually really entertaining and really engaging and had some really interesting characters and angles and things like that. Because what does make the, you know, this setup more interesting and not just, you know, Jason Bourne and stuff like that. They kind of do some genre mixing because they want to do a pot comedy, but they want to do this kind of romantic thing too. Mm-hmm. And, I think what they needed somebody who can do that kind of madcap thing. The first person I thought of was, this kind of wants to be an Edgar Wright movie, but I was like, that still doesn't feel right. Oh, what about somebody like Drew Goddard? Mm-hmm. I think that he would have been an excellent choice to make this film. I mean, he might have been doing 1,000 other things or whatever, but I feel like this is just, it's a very frustrating film to watch. Because of that, because I think it's okay, but I think it could have been at least pretty good, like pretty. And there's a point in time where there's some of the actors that really know what they're doing. There's this point where they go into this drug dealer's house played by John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
And all these people, and the energy just picks up and it's beautiful in that one scene. And it's really good.
Yeah, for that one sequence.
Or you have people like Walter Goggins. I think I'm saying his name right.
Who does he play in the movie?
He plays Laffer.
Oh, yeah.
Walton Goggins. There we go.
Well, there's a certain amount of... Max Landis is also notably a comic book fan. He did the Death of Superman kind of comedy video on YouTube that sort of... kind of went viral and, you know, got his name out there in a big way.
Well, Chronicle, too, is it's basically.
And Chronicle is, like, loaded with superhero tropes, yeah. And I think that there's a comic book-ish feel to this movie.
True.
That I was thinking about, like, how it would play if this was, like, a Vertigo kind of title.
Mm-hmm.
And how these tones... Because I agree with you. The movie is... The biggest problem with it is a tonal problem.
But I don't think it's the script.
Not necessarily, no. I think I agree with you again that it's a lot of it is direction. Although I don't think that the direction formally is bad. Like, the action scenes look good. It's shot nicely.
Yeah.
Pacing is a kind of a problem, but it's, you know,
Material is handled.
Right. It's how it's the discrepancy between, I think, three entities, and that is the writer, the director, and the actors. I think they're all three making different movies.
Agreed. Because one of the things that was frustrating about Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart is they're kind of making this very sweet, like, love story.
I actually think that stuff works really well, though. I don't have a problem with them in this movie. I just don't think that they're in sync with what the screenplay is and what even maybe what the director wants.
Agreed.
I feel like the director's making an action movie and a pretty straightforward violent one at that.
Sure.
And I feel like the screenplay is a little bit more meta and a little bit more kind of cine literate and a little bit more, you know, playing around with genre and whatever. And I feel like Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart are making this really earnest love story. Mm-hmm. And I actually think when they get to, like, get together, you know, that they're opening, like, the opening 20 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, this happens every once in a while where I know what the movie's going to be because based upon what the trailers and whatever's told me.
Sure.
But sometimes the setting up of the character stuff, I am so in with it that I'm like, I don't want you to become a super spy. I kind of like this.
Like, well, I did find, again, one of the angles that was very specifically interesting about this was how they were using mental health issues and problems.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically with the main character, Jesse Eisenberg, he had panic attacks. And I actually felt like they were almost a little more realistic than especially genre usually uses.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones get a little off, but I mean that's okay because you're in this hyper realistic world,
right?
Specifically his were very it was very earnest. It was a little bit more realistic than some of the depictions I've seen of, like, panic attacks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I one thing I will disagree with you, because you said you really liked, I rolled my eyes a shit ton when they did their love stuff. It was so hokey.
It was
it gagged me with a spoon kind of hokey.
I see. I didn't think so. I thought it was hokey in that way that like two people who are in an intimate thing away from everybody else will allow themselves to be, like, you know, where they can look at the stars and whatever. But you're also like supposed to like understand that they're like stoned and speaking a little out of character anyway.
But I thought they, but again, I think that they were playing it a little too realistic. They needed, I felt like this needed some more, Jesse Eisenberg has been in some, you know, straight up comedies.
Yeah.
But I felt like it needed somebody who could be a little bit more arch, who could be a little bit, could kind of hit the comedic beat a little harder, because I don't feel like either of them did, and it needed to happen.
Well, see, that's the weird conundrum of this movie, for me anyways, mm-hmm. is that I feel like the best stuff of this movie is in conflict with the movie. You know, because I feel like the relationship between Kristen Stewart and Jesse Eisenberg is the only thing I actually end up caring about, even though it's, you know, wrapped up in this big genre mashup, you know, kind of madcap thing. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's that intimacy between the two that I'm actually invested in, but it's at odds with what the rest of the movie wants to be. Topher Grace, I feel like, is in the right movie, but he is so at odds with how the movie's turning out that he comes off as kind of obnoxious.
Oh, that one I'm confused by, because I think he was in the right place. I even thought halfway, I think he should be Jesse Eisenberg's character. I'd even be okay if they mm-hmm. flopped characters like halfway through. I don't mean that literally.
Right. No, I know what you mean. Like if they'd recasted the role, I think Topher Grace was being directed as like, oh, this is a comedy and you get to be really big. And mm-hmm. he does. But I feel like the movie tonally is so kind of dark a lot of the time that
right.
when he's like, you know, calling women like dumb, ugly bitches and like kicking them and stuff, I don't get the feeling like, oh, you're this character I love to hate. I just kind of hate you.
He feels a little too mean almost. But again, I think that his juxtaposition in the like super spy stuff, the character played by Connie Britton, Victoria Lassiter, I think that she also is doing the same thing. And you know yeah. what? In a lot of ways, they don't have a connection to this Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart storyline.
No, but when the movie's jumping back and forth from both, mm-hmm. you're jumping from one movie to another.
But it needed to be knitted together.
The movie feels... I agree with you. It's mostly frustrating. I feel like it is a laudable failure, and it's at least failing with good intentions. And I think that it has a kind of odd, ugly duckling kind of destined to be a cult movie kind of thing to it that I sort of appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in like a maybe kind of like a Empire Records sort of way. Like, it's not a very good movie, but if it's on TV, you'll end up watching it.
It has a weird charm to it.
Yeah.
Like, even though it's kind of like a failure in a way.
Right.
I'm not saying like complete fail or anything, because that has a loaded language in these days.
But. Yeah, no, I mean it in the way that they, ultimately the movie that they were trying to make didn't get made.
Agreed.
But I guess kind of walked away from it like, well, it was an experience.
Well, okay. I do agree with you that the director showed competency in his action scenes. Those were done. Those hit their mark and were done well.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of his darker, like, again, I thought most of the, and I don't know if it's the actor or just they kind of got each other, the Walton Goggins character, Laffer, but that character within that whole context worked to me.
Yeah, he felt like a comic book character.
Well, he felt like a comic book character and a comic book character that fit into that whole scenario.
Yeah. When they introduced the character in Shadow,
mm-hmm.
and you, like, you saw like, oh, they're building him up to be like a villain.
Right.
Like that's when I realized like I got a glimpse of the tone that the original screenplay was going for.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of Max Landis's, I guess, writerly obsessions, mm-hmm. kind of playing out. And I think that sometimes the Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart stuff has that as well.
Sure.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess ultimately it's a little bit of a mess. But I don't know. I want to root for this movie, even though I know that it's a problem.
See, and again, I can't. I just think it's frustrating. I don't think, I think that they messed up on the tone. It was wrong. They needed somebody who could do this kind of madcap stuff, and it wasn't there. You know, they did. They just thought if you throw some explosions and some of this, it'll work itself out. But I.
But here's my, this is, again, this is my conflict where I say the best stuff in this movie is at odds with the movie. I feel like if you'd streamlined it and they'd made the movie that they were advertising, and that it was just this kind of stoner comedy that happened to have kind of an action movie thing, like I was strongly reminded of like a Ruben Fleischer kind of look and feel when they were advertising it as like, you know, not just because Jesse Eisenberg's in it.
He's the Zombieland guy.
Yeah, he did Zombieland, he did Gangster Squad and what was that, 30 Minutes or Less. That was sort of what they were selling it as a movie sort of like Zombieland. And I think had it been that, yeah, it would have been more successful at what it was trying to be, and it would be the movie that we expected to see when we walked into the theater, and we probably would.
Sorry.
You're okay.
Couldn't help it. I don't know where that came from. Oh my gosh.
Took a big bong hit. That's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
For the episode. No, but I think, yeah, if that had been the movie that we ended up seeing, we probably would have come away with it with a better review for it, but I think it would have been a less interesting movie. It just would have been another one of those kind of movies.
And I.
I think this movie is more interesting because of its flaws, but it's not working.
See, you're going from the advertisement angle where I kind of ignored that. I honestly didn't. I think I'm caught part of the commercial at one point, and I didn't
But you're
really.
suggesting that it be more arch and comedic.
I am suggesting that there should be a better tonal shift. I don't think that the pieces need to be shifted around at all. I think somebody needs to understand and be able to handle the material better. And I can almost I can pin a lot of that on just directing choices. And I can also pin that on, you know, being miscast, 'cause I don't think that they work completely. Now, I'm not saying I think that there are some interesting pieces. I'm not disagreeing with that. And again, I didn't say that this is an all out like horrible film or anything. I just say this is very a frustrating film
No, I agree with
because
you.
I think it could be fixed and it could be the reason it's frustrating is because it could be so fucking cool. And specifically, again, if those issues were solved, but I can't only watch this and say, oh, this is the film it could have been. So I for more or less have to be kind of like, I guess. I can't completely agree because you're like, oh, I'm glad it wasn't what it was in the commercials. But that wasn't my experience.
I'm not necessarily glad it wasn't. I'm just the movie that it ended up being, for all of its problems, and there are plenty, is, I think, a lot more dense than what I was expecting. I didn't know that it would have any dramatic weight. I thought it was gonna be goofy, just goofy time the whole time.
Well, they definitely advertised it as that.
Yeah.
I didn't completely know what I was coming in for. And I kind of wanted that. I knew the synopsis. I knew it from online. That's where I'd seen the marketing, and it was
Yeah.
like just posters.
Yeah, of them smoking pot.
Yes.
And yeah, there's a lot of drug humor in this, or a lot of pot humor, but it's not a stoner comedy.
Well, no, he takes, I mean, it's essentially for him, at least for Jesse Eisenberg's character. It's
Yeah.
a medical thing. He's using it for medical purposes for his anxiety. And so
Right.
I don't know. It's sort of it is. I can see your point, kind of, but I'm just judging it on. I'm not judging on what it could have been according to the previews. I'm judging what I actually saw, and that's it. I'm saying I don't give a shit what the preview said. For me, it's just, oh, this didn't live up to what it could have been.
No, it doesn't work. I'm not apologizing for that at all. But it doesn't work in an interesting way. That's all I can say about it. So yeah, I don't know. I mildly recommend it as a curiosity, but I think ultimately it's not a successful film.
Agreed.
Okay, speaking of curiosities,
Oh, okay.
Richard, we got to get into it. The Netflix homework you assigned me last week.
Yeah.
The Monkey Hustle.
The Monkey Hustle, yeah. The Monkey Hustle doesn't really have a lot to do with the guy with the shiny gold blouse.
No, they're definitely they're putting him on the cover of the one sheet because he draws the most attention, I think, to the eye. Do you want to describe this?
Well, I'm just trying to describe the blouse. It could be more. It could be more in the movie, but other than that, you know, I actually found this. This was a fairly charming little. I think it's a black exploitation movie. I don't know much about the history of it, but basically a hustler from Chicago. He takes his gang of kids around and rips people off and steals their luggage and stuff like that.
finds ways of making money out of having no money. And
and somehow that ties into, I didn't really see a broad connection, but there's a freeway coming into the neighborhood that's going to like divide it up and like destroy it or something. And I don't know how that ties in, but that's happening as well.
Right.
But it's mostly about this guy running around hustling people and a drummer that's come off the road and doesn't have a lot of options, but is trying to like solve his love life. I don't know. This doesn't have a plot. Just stuff happens. Not really.
It kind of felt plotless to me though, in a dazed and confused sort of way. Like it felt like everyone has their sort of like individual stories, and the movie sort of just drifts from one character to the other to the other.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's cohesive. Like I was never lost.
It's more about like getting to know this neighborhood and getting to know this community than it is about like, you know, following one person's journey.
Yeah. And I sort of appreciate it. And I really do feel like it, when I say cohesive, I mean, I really did like just kind of go through the different stories and was like, okay, man, that's cool. Oh, that's good. they do this, 70s jive talk thing.
Oh yeah. As far as like exploitation dialogue goes, like blaxploitation dialogue, this is like
the Shakespeare of jive talk.
Yeah, it is. I was glad I had the subtitles on because there was sometimes just like their turn of phrase. I was like, what does that mean? And then I'd like, oh, okay.
No, see, I loved it I don't know. It just has a weird charm to it. And for some reason they do this hand signal and say Monkey Hustle a lot. And it's the theme song. But it's just the like
in the tradition of like 70s movies. I mean, even Deep Throat has a soundtrack.
Well, Daddy Fox, who is one of the main characters, that's his like catchphrase. He just says to people, it makes me feel like I should have a catchphrase, but no, I don't know. It's kind of a weird film to talk about because I feel like it was fairly well acted too. Now, I wouldn't recommend it to everybody because I don't know. I think you'd have to go for this kind of film and just be able to kind of sit and go through this like adventure.
Right.
But as for I've watched some black exploitation movies that are really boring and don't really work as well as this one. And so I find this one to be much more
entertaining.
Just entertaining and kind of. I feel like I've used this word several times this podcast, maybe not, but I feel that it's charming. There's just a sort of quality to it that I'm like, okay, that's even though you're teaching, you know, kids to commit crimes, you're a nice man.
No, that was my biggest takeaway from it. I think I've seen a few exploitation movies. I wouldn't say I'm an expert in it by any means, but I've seen a handful of them. And I would say of all of the ones I've seen, this feels the most wholesome. Like, yeah, I mean, it's an R-rated film, you know, or, I mean, it says here PG, actually, but I think that would be different if it was re-rated today. And there's, you know, they're committing crimes, there's, you know, they're trying to, like, hook up with chicks the whole time. But it feels so kind of like, in its own weird way, it feels kind of like Andy Griffith of, like, inner city Chicago in the 70s. Like, you know, focusing on these criminals. And, like, you even have, like, this Barney Fife-type cop who's, like, ridiculously incompetent.
That's a good way to go into this film, because I didn't think about that. That didn't come to mind initially, but it's totally true.
And it's kind of sweet in its own weird way. And it's like nothing like really bad is going to happen. There's not like, you know, some people get beat up, but it's not like a Jack Hill movie or something where people are being drugged behind cars and that type of stuff. Like it doesn't have that extreme exploitation edge.
Well, there's some fights in there that were kind of like, whoa, like, there was two fights specifically that were like, whoa. There's one where just like one of the criminal kids who just runs around and does crime stuff and tries to hook up with chicks. He beats up this guy in this alley. He had something to do with one of the other hustlers in there, but I didn't really... I was like, okay, whatever. But then also his girlfriend and his other girlfriend get in a fight at one point. And
yeah.
There's a point where it's just like, oh, it's just some hair pulling and pretty normal. But then there's this point where it turns and like one of them is really punching and beating the shit out of the other one. And I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, this got real. The cat fight, like it's kind of real.
Well,
yeah.
It's kind of weird because it almost kind of demystifies it. Like, because a normal take on this kind of like inner city would be like gritty and meaner.
Sure.
And again, you said this has an Andy Griffith quality. And so I think it's kind of an interesting because it's almost like, you know, most people who even perpetuate crimes, like these low level crimes, are pretty like decent people. They're just doing, you know, a few little shady things.
Right. Well, in the case of this movie in particular, these are people who are, you know, I feel like the kind of the understated thing. I mean, a lot of, you know, I would say the thing that you need to walk into this movie the most is sort of at least a base understanding of what blaxploitation is all about. And, you know, kind of this is directed by Arthur Marx, who I looked into. I've seen one other movie he did, actually. He did a Pam Grier movie called Friday Foster, which I have in a, two DVD combo thing that I bought that has Coffee on one side and Friday Foster on the other. So I've seen that, and he's done a handful of other blaxploitation movies. He's white, as most blaxploitation directors were.
Well, Detroit 9000, too, is a pretty popular one, from what I remember.
Yeah, Tarantino, curated that when he had his little line with his little boutique DVD division with Miramax. But yeah, you know, so the underlying message of a lot of these movies is these sort of black empowerment fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, focus in on black characters, because if you look back in the 70s, yeah, every once in a while you would have your Apollo Creeds or whatever, who were kind of big characters. But for the most part, black people in movies back then were either playing thugs, like low level thugs that have like barely any lines, and they were or like doormen or whatever. They didn't have big parts in movies.
Sure.
And so blaxploitation movies, what they were exploiting was basically this totally underserved population that didn't have movies with people who looked and acted like them. And it was a cartoon version of it, and it was never like particularly honest, and it was always definitely ingrained in stereotypes because they were largely directed and written by white people.
Well, that's the thing too, is the name gives me pause to even say it, but
right. Exactly.
But by the end, I'm singing that song, so.
Well, yeah. Very catchy. But it also ended up being this thing where it's like, finally, this community had movies of their own. And so I think this movie in particular, the highway thing you talked about, which I agree is like barely integrated until the end, even though it ends up sort of being the thing that ties everything together.
Sort of, yeah.
I saw that as being kind of like this... This message about gentrification and sort of like having their community change. You know, it's sort of like, here's two times in a row I get to talk about Empire Records. It's like the idea of like, you know, at the end of Empire Records, when like the big corporation's going to come and take the little indie store away. And so they finally get to like overtake it and yay and have a big party.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen like the David and Goliath story like that play out in a lot of different TV and movies. And it's that story as far as that part of the story. But it also kind of plays in with that whole sort of, black empowerment fantasy that was going on in a lot of these movies.
And I think the gentrification maybe, like, I mean, it does sort of do that, but I think that's I mean, if you're really trying to reach for it.
Well, I mean, that's what they're celebrating. That's the loss that they're worried about happening.
I'm talking about the film as a whole. Yeah, no, the community... I agree with that one particular moment where they're having the block party. Sure.
Sure. Well, I think the movie, if it's about anything, is about community.
Yes.
It's not necessarily about hustling. It's not really necessarily about, like, you know, this one drummer who wants to fall in love or this one hustler who's trying to, like, overcome these other hustlers who are moving in on his thing or whatever, because the stakes are never really that high between any of it. So it ends up being mostly about just kind of this bird's eye view of this community as a whole. And I kind of appreciated it on that level. Like I said, it has kind of like a Dazed and Confused, you know, like Nashville kind of vibe to it, where you're drifting from sort of one character to another and just kind of getting a bigger picture.
Like, what is this picture in time? What is this place? What are these
people? Yeah, this like snapshot.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that works also because, like, because in a way there's kind of this weird, like, when the adults talk, the adults being Daddy Fox and I can't find the woman who owned the coffee shop. Her daughter was Sweet Potato, I believe. That's important, everyone.
Right.
But anyways, they're having these like kind of intimate talks and kind of having more of a grown-up time, because mm-hmm. it's almost like this is shot through the perspective of children. Like, and yeah. I don't mean that in like a condescending way. Like, I mean, like it's like I feel like the POV is through the kids in this film.
Yeah.
Like these, you know, local community heroes. But when they're having this like intimate, like grown up time, he's like, you know, I'm not making that much money. I'm just barely like scraping by. And I'm having a hard time with this. And so it's sort of interesting. And then, but it kind of shows how this all kind of links and correlates, like as a community, how they each affect each other and stuff. But I don't know. It was just, it's kind of I think it's a pretty, one of the easier, Black exploitation movies.
Yeah, I would say it's a good lead-in, especially because it's not as violent as some of them can be.
Yes.
You know, it's not like a Jack Hill movie or something where the exploitation is so extreme. But it's also, yeah, like I said, it's kind of sweet. It feels like it has its roots a little bit in television. And, yeah, I kind of recommend it. I think, you know, if you can get beyond the point of how weird the movie dates...
Mm-hmm.
Just by the outfits and the music and that kind of stuff. Although Tarantino being out there has helped a lot of people kind of get a foot in the door anyway.
Right.
If you've seen Jackie Brown or even Pulp Fiction, a few other of his movies that kind of play around in this territory, then you have at least have a base understanding of the genre.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good lead in to it because it is kind of so wholesome and kind of just fun and it breezes by and it's not very fussy. And yeah, I just enjoyed it.
And again, they really, all the parts work. Like, mm-hmm. There was no point where I felt like there was like a pause. Like, I mean, there are older, you know, films from the 70s and 60s and stuff like that, where you kind of feel the dating in like how the pace of it works.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel that in this. It just felt like one, like, I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing about exploitation movies. They trim the fat.
Yeah. I think it's good.
Yeah, I think it was Roger Corman who always said, every movie, if you shake it hard enough, 20 minutes will fall out.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think you make a good point. I think that this is a good place to start, but yeah, if you like these kind of things, I would definitely recommend this, personally, as well.
The movie I'm going to assign you next week is a foreign film I saw the ads to earlier this year called White God. I don't know what it's about. Wait. Other than
you don't. Okay, keep going. Is this like mad September where we just pick things that we're not really sure what they are? Or just
no, I kind of know what this is about.
Okay,
there is as far as I can tell, the main characters of this movie is dogs, and there's a bunch of them, and they're running rampantly through the streets. And I don't know what it's about, but it was one of the most intriguing trailers I'd ever seen.
It's not a cartoon.
No. It's a live action film.
White what?
White God.
God, okay. I thought you were making me watch a racist film, and I didn't think that that was a very... I thought it was like, oh, you're really funny, great juxtaposition guy.
So, yeah, I was excited for that movie, and it kind of came and went, and I was a little bit sad that I didn't get to see it. So, there it is.
A film from Hungary. Mm-hmm. Hungarian film. Oh, well, okay.
And if anybody has anything to say about any of the movies or movie news that we talked about this week, you can email us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can find us on Twitter at jabberpodcast, all one word. We're also available on Stitcher and iTunes, where you can subscribe and also leave a 5-star review and a 1-sentence tag on there, just to get people to actually look and listen to our show. We're also available on the Zune and Windows Podcast Network, as well as Pocket Cast, if you so prefer. You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly at the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can also read Richard's scribblings he did over his blog, rdwally.weebly.com. You can see the stuff that I've done for the Seattle-based website, MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And be sure to listen to Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa over at their podcast, Quarter Life Crisis, at quartercrisis.podbean.com. I know they're working on some stuff, some new content to put up. They have a bunch of interviews that are kind of locked and loaded. They just have to edit it and get it out there. Be sure to listen to Leland over at his podcast from Olympia, Washington at dampercast.com. And be sure to listen to our episode on Make Dad Read Comics. I think that's going to be coming out. If it hasn't already come out by the time you're listening to this, it will very, very soon, within the same week. And if you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, I will post the episode. We had a lot of fun with Patrick and his dad.
That was great.
And I hope that people go back and listen to them and, go back in their backlogs and listen to their other episodes, too, because they're really good when we're not on it. Maybe even better.
Well, it's a great concept. Just alone. But they both have his dad has a fun charm just from his age group and his background and everything like that. And trying to make him read comics is mm-hmm. just kind of, it sets up situations that are kind of wonderful. So,
right. And also, there's the sort of, the aspect of it where it's just, it's a podcast about a son learning more about his dad and his dad learning more about his son.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what definitely what keeps me coming back to Make Dad Read Comics. But until then, we will talk to you next week.
Okay, have a good one.
Bye.